From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
I will confess right off, I love epimediums, but apparently not as much as today's guest, who boasts the largest selection of them for sale in the United States. More on her and these choice perennials in a moment, but first, these messages.
Underwriting support from High Mowing Organic Seeds, the first independently owned farm-based seed company proudly serving organic gardeners and farmers with 100% organic and non-GMO vegetable, herb, and flower seeds. HighMowingSeeds.com/awaytogarden. Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
Karen Perkins has since 2009 owned Garden Visions Epimediums, a small retail mail-order nursery located in rural central Massachusetts and founded in 1997 by Daryl Probst. She's also open for visits and in-person shopping a couple of spectacular weeks each May, during epimedium peak season, of course. So welcome to the show, Karen. I can't wait to learn more.
Great. I'm glad to be here.
And I wish it weren't winter, and I wish we could go see them right now. So as I mentioned in the intro, Karen, you've been the owner of Garden Vision Epimedium since 2009, and I read on your website that you're a one-woman band, like a certain Margaret Roach I know. I was pretty astonished. Yeah?
I think a lot of people are. They assume that it's a bigger company.
Yeah.
And I've had people come here and say, oh, I didn't realize it was a small business, but it is.
Yeah.
Mostly me and with a little bit of help from my friends.
Yeah, it's great. And how many different varieties of plants are you listing in the catalog at any given time? The online catalog, I mean.
I think it's about 170 different species and varieties of epimediums, but I also have some other companion shade-loving perennials.
Yeah.
So maybe a couple of hundred.
Yeah. And now most people, they print out a mail order form. They browse through the website, epimediums.com. Is that right? Did I get that
correct?
Right?
And I do have a print catalog as well.
You do have a print catalog. Okay. So they can order a print catalog or they can...
They can.
Or they can download an order form and fill out stuff that they like online and mail that
right.
to you.
And the print catalog is online as well. They can look at that online or print it out themselves.
Okay. And then people can come. I have to confess, I'm like planning a trip there. People can come in May to visit?
They can. I have the nursery open during what I am predicting to be the peak epimedium season.
Yeah.
That would be May 3rd through the 19th. I'm open every day from 10 to 4.
Wow.
And that's really the best way to see the plants. You can't really get a good idea of what they look like, you know, looking at the pictures in the catalog. You have to kind of see them in context in the garden setting.
Yeah. So epimediums, you know, they have a lot of funny common names. The first one I think I ever remember learning was barren warts, and then bishop's caps and fairy wings. And I think I even read in a scientific paper once that another common name was horny goatweed, and who knows what that means. But many gardeners know these plants simply as sort of workhorse ground covers for dry shade. Like, that's their sort of synonymous, you know, description. But I think you want to encourage us to think a little more widely, don't you, about them?
I do. I think there are several kinds of epimediums that are good for dry shade. They don't love dry shade, but they'll tolerate it better than other perennials. One of the problems with epimediums is that they're not very widely available in the retail garden centers. And the ones that are, that you can find, I think tend to be more of the ground cover spreading type that are drought tolerant, and so that's probably why they've gotten that, tag to them, that they love dry shade, but actually most of them are clumping forms, and they would prefer to have adequate moisture in the soil.
So name a couple. So, like, I think of the first ones maybe that I bought. I don't know how many different kinds I have, but not that many, maybe a half a dozen. I feel like maybe words that were in their names were like Youngianum and Grandiflorum and Sulfurium.
Yeah, some of the ones that are common, that you can commonly find, are Epimedium ex rubrum with
rubrum,
little red flowers.
Right.
That's a spreader. Also, Epimedium ex versicolor Sulfurium with yellow flowers.
Yeah.
And nice red modeling on the spring foliage. And then orange conigan, ex Warleyanthes orange conigan, is another spreader that you can commonly find. Fronleaten, ex Peraltricum fronleaten. Those are all really good drought tolerant.
So those are the ones that match that sort of presumptive name description that people think
they
dry
are.
Shade ground cover. Yeah.
They are.
Okay. All right, good. So those are the ones you do. But so some clump, huh, as opposed to spread.
They do. Epimediums are actually woody plants. Most people think of them as herbaceous, but they grow by underground woody rhizomes. And so it's how much of a growth increment the stem, the rhizome, puts on each year mm-hmm. determines whether they're going to form a clump or spread into a patch over time.
I think that's something that if anyone ever digs one up, whether to divide it or move it or whatever, you have this weird aha because what you see underground, well, first of all, in my experience, which again is not vast, but I have had them for many, many years, is that I don't end up with a big clump of soil around my clump. The minute I lift it out of the ground, it's kind of these woody rhizomes.
Right.
You know what
especially,
I mean?
Especially if you're digging up one of the spreading types.
Yes. Yes, so it's kind of this strange-looking network of these woody, well, rhizomes.
Yep.
And not a big clod, like if I dug up a hosta, you know, I'd end up
right.
with this big clod.
And,
yeah.
But actually, you know, if you dig up one of the clumping forms, you're going to get a big clod
okay.
like a hosta
okay.
would be.
So that would be one way, even if you didn't know, that you'd know, yeah? I mean, is that they actually have that different behavior.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And so what are some of the clumpers, some of the ones that are...
Actually, some of the ones that you can find in nurseries, one is called Lilifee. It's a grandiform variety
yes.
native to Japan. That's a clumper.
Yeah.
Nivium, Exiongianum nivium,
sure.
is a white-flowered,
yeah.
sort of little bell-shaped white-flowered one,
mm-hmm.
form. That's a clumper. Another one, it's just going out of my head right now. Exiongianum roseum sometimes, and grandiflorum rose queen, which we call yube.
Mm-hmm.
We think that's the correct
right.
botanical name because it was a Japanese cultivar originally. That one is a clumper. So they're quite, most of what I carry, most of the species that I carry are clumping forms.
Okay. And so if they're clumping forms, then they're not, you know, they're not just for that dry shade ground cover use. So what's their role then in the garden? Like, how do you use them in the garden?
I use them like I would use any other perennial.
Mm-hmm.
I mix them in with others. Actually, my landscape is more of a monoculture just because I need room for stock. I do throw a few other shade plants in there, but I think they look great with mixed in with other shade-loving perennials like hostas, ferns, hellebores, trilliums. Especially the different textures of the foliages looks nice in the garden.
Yeah.
And many of the clump-forming ones, especially some of the new hybrids, are showy. That's one of the things that people say about epimediums, that their flowers are small, they're not very showy. But some of the new varieties, I would say, would rival any other perennial in the garden.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, you mentioned foliage and the foliage shapes and so forth and pairing them with other foliage, you know, sort of shade garden plants. The foliage in some of them, the ones that are less familiar to me than some that we've named so far that we might see at the garden center, it's very distinctive. I mean, I think on epimediums.com you have a sort of a glossary picture, you know, of like pieces of, you know, leaves of different varieties spread out maybe on the ground or on a stone or something.
Right.
And boy, oh boy, I mean, they're all over the place in shape and scale.
Yeah. I made that little collage because a lot of people say, oh, that all epimediums look the same. So I went around the gardens and picked some leaves one summer day. Epimediums are in the barberry family, so a lot of the, especially the Chinese species, some of them have spiny edges to the leaves. They're more arrow-shaped rather than heart-shaped, like the deciduous ones that would be native to Japan and Korea.
Oh.
So that's what makes the difference.
Okay. And I've always had a particular love for the fact that when the fresh foliage emerges pretty early in the spring, of even some of the most familiar ones, that the ones I've grown, most of them, it has a striking reddish, cast, or part of the leaf is. It's colorful. It's not just plain green.
Yeah.
What's that about?
Many of the epimediums, when they emerge in the spring, they can have all sorts of wild spring foliage colors, and that's my favorite thing
about
them.
Isn't it amazing? It's amazing.
Yeah, I think the older I get, the more I look for foliage over flowers in perennials for the garden. But they're not just red. They can be all, some of them are almost black when they come up out of the ground. They can have all sorts of speckling, mottling, splotching, you know, rings around the rims of the leaves. They come in a wild range of patterns and colors, and I think it's brought on by the cool weather. There's some of the species, like Grandiflorum is a good example, has a second growth flush. So when epimediums bloom very, very early in the spring, they'll bloom with the bulbs, and they'll come push up out of the soil. The foliage will have its spring color if it's one of the varieties that has that.
Mm.
They'll bloom, and then the leaves will harden off, turn to green, and the flowers will pass. But some of them, like Grandiflorum, will put up a second growth flush. And if you compare the colors of the spring foliage from first flush to second flush, the first flush is usually the more intensely colored of the flushes, and the second flush is sort of a little more washed out. But it still gives you a top knot of colorful foliage into June here. So if you have a cool spring and you have an epimedium that has good foliage color, you can get a really long season of spring interest for about 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yes. You know, I have them in some cases in places where in the main season, maybe you're not going to see them so much. For instance, I have one big kind of island off a garden shed of a sumac, a gold leaf sumac, a staghorn, cut leaf staghorn sumac. And so there's these twisty, crazy trunks that are naked in the early spring, yeah, but they're kind of interesting structurally. And I have epimedium kind of, it's you know, maybe 15 feet by 10 feet, this island, this bed. And so the epimediums are underneath them in the middle, kind of. And so you see this from the edge of the bed or when walking across the lawn, you know, in there under the twisty trunks, you see this beautiful foliage thing happening. And then the flowers. And I don't care so much if you see them in the heat of summer, you know, once the foliage of the sumac is out and things
right.
are a little more grown up. I mean, in some places, I guess what I'm saying is I use them to draw your attention to something before everything else is going on, you know, to play on that colorful
right.
foliage and stuff.
And that's one of the good things about epimediums is that they bloom so early
yeah.
that there's not much else out in the garden. So even though their beauty might be a little more subtle than some other perennials, you notice it because there's not a
exactly.
lot of anything else up then.
Yeah, no, exactly. So we talked a little bit about leaf shape and sort of the color, and I sort of think of them when I describe them, the ones I have anyway, I sort of think of them as almost like, quote, persistent. I don't know if I'd say evergreen, but like the leaves, they hang around a good long time, and around this time of year, if I could get out, meaning late winter, early spring, if I could get outside, which I can't right now, I would cut back the old foliage, but it stays there for many of them. Do they all keep their leaves? What's kind of the persistence of the foliage, so to speak?
Well, it depends on the species, really.
Yeah,
there
yeah.
are ones that I do consider to be deciduous. Some of the really cold hardy ones, the hardiest ones, can lose their leaves after the first few frosts.
Interesting. Okay.
And then some of them have more substance to the leaf, and I would consider them evergreen, even
uh-huh.
though in Massachusetts here, we're in Zone 5B, and most winters they don't go through the winter unscathed. That you would want to cut the foliage back
mm-hmm.
on them. So I either do it in the fall. I have a lot of foliage to cut back because I have so many epimediums. So I do some of them. I do the deciduous ones in the fall if I have time, and then the evergreen or semi-evergreen ones in the springtime. But if you don't make it out into your garden to get them cut back, there's nothing to worry about because the new growth will come up through the old foliage,
right.
and eventually it'll cover it over, and you won't even see it. And it'll make your plant larger, because it sort of reaches up above the old leaves.
Oh, interesting. Because I always say to people who say to me, well, how do you get all your hellebores cut back in time? And how do you get all your epimediums cut back in time? And I'm like, you know what? In nature, nobody cuts the stuff back, so it's okay to leave it. It's okay.
Right.
It looks a little messy for a minute there. you know, on that transition moment.
It does. It does.
But then, as you say, the new stuff is, you know, is lifted up by it, and it's good. It's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Cut the ones you just said you cut back. Which ones when? So
well,
give us some examples.
It's just mostly because I have so many to cut back.
Yes,
I do the deciduous ones because they're sort of brown and ugly in the fall, and then I leave. You know, I leave the evergreen ones so I can enjoy them for a little bit. But in our zone, I would say they usually stay pretty good in evergreen until maybe the middle of January. Sometimes if you get good snow cover, some of them will come through. You know, in the spring, and you could, and the foliage, it still looks good, you can leave it.
Right.
But that is not very often in our area. Further south, they would be much more reliably evergreen.
And how hardy, I mean, I know that there's a number of species, and maybe I should ask you, how big is the genus, do you think? I mean, is it dozens of species?
I think there's around 70 different species now.
Oh, my goodness, okay.
So there's been kind of an explosion. In 1975, there were 21 species described.
Oh.
So there's been an explosion the last few years, especially in the 90s, mostly because of China, plant explorers going to China and discovering new species. Actually, Daryl and a woman that he worked with, Joanna Zhang, who did some collecting trips for him, they helped to describe several species. Their name is on the original herbarium specimens for this describing the
and
species.
That's Daryl, the founder of Garden Vision Epimediums.
Yep.
Yeah. So when I cut mine back, I don't have as anywhere even a tenth, a hundredth as many as you do, but I have some big swaths. And I have to confess that lately I've been using hedge shears.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of get down real low and go whop. You know what I mean? I know that sounds maybe a little nutty and not quite as gentle, but it doesn't disturb the plants, and it's brittle by then. So what do you do? What do you use a hand shear?
Mine is a special case because I have to worry about all the labeling, the labels. So I have like a curved, serrated stainless steel knife that I use. That goes really quickly.
Oh.
I used to use pruners or scissors.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've heard of people, if you have a big patch of a running epimedium, there's nothing wrong with running a lawnmower over it.
Right, before everything emerges.
Whatever works for you. I find the knife works the quickest for me because I have to be a little careful just keeping track of the different varieties.
I'm going to have to find out about that knife. I don't know that.
Yeah, you know, I got it from Lee Valley Tools, and I've been trying to get them to carry it again. They've discontinued it. And I've searched for it on the internet. I found one source in Australia, but it's like an inexpensive $10 knife, and it's like worth gold to me. I used to give it out as Christmas presents.
Interesting.
I cut my ornamental grasses back with that.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes.
Yeah. Anything that's kind of difficult makes it much easier than using pruners. It doesn't make your hand as tired.
Huh. So and now, so there are maybe as many as 70 species, but the ones that we generally cultivate or the ones that you might be showcasing in the catalog and on the website, is there like a zone range of hardiness?
I would say a safe range for most of them is 5 to 7. But, you know, I have customers in northern Vermont, in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
I have customers in Atlanta, Georgia, that tell me that they can pretty much grow whatever I can grow here.
Huh.
So I'm still learning about, you know, the hardiness and I on the website and in the catalog I give people recommendations of things they should try if they live in certain parts of the country, but that doesn't mean that other ones won't grow well for them.
Right.
I find in general the Chinese species are a little I think they're at the edge of their hardiness here for me in zone 5B.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And some of them struggle along, so sometimes I can't put them in the catalog because I don't have a lot of crop.
Right.
But other species like Fargesii and Stellulatum, they grow really fine for me, and they're from China as well. When Daryl did his collecting in China, he would collect at a certain elevation, 3,000 feet, so that he was trying to bring back clones that would be hardy enough for us to grow outdoors here in Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Most of them have done pretty well, and some of them have done extremely well.
Okay. And they don't seem to attract animals, herbivorous animals. To my eye, I haven't really ever noticed anyone munching on them. Are they resistant?
They're good with, they're deer resistant. Sometimes the deer will nibble them, but they don't really crave them. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people have trouble with rabbits eating the new growth.
Rabbits will eat anything.
Once the leaves harden off, they don't seem to bother them, and sometimes they nibble the new growth. But the good thing about epimediums is that they have dormant buds, so even if they eat all the foliage off the plant, the stem and the buds are underground.
Yeah.
So they'll eventually force new growth.
Okay. So we have maybe 5 minutes left, and I wanted to talk about, you've sort of alluded to some of the showy hybrids and some that are different from the typical stereotype of epimedium and so forth. So I wanted to kind of just hear about a few that you'd love us to know that are different, that maybe have won your particular affection, and also then some of the companions, that go with them. By the way, two of my favorites, the Jeffersonia and the Vancouveria, I think are also Barberry relatives, aren't they?
They are.
Yeah, I always loved finding that out. I don't remember how many decades ago I found that out, and I was like, oh, really? How can that be? But anyway, so what are some of the ones you'd love us to kind of know about that are different?
Okay.
Yeah.
People are always asking me what my favorite is, and that's like asking you what your favorite food is.
I know, or
so
children.
Many favorite things. But if I had a gun to my head and I had to choose, I probably would pick pink champagne. It's a hybrid of Darrell's, and it has long wands of pink spidery flowers over arrow-shaped foliage that gets some dark speckling in the spring, and it blooms for a long time. And the flowers are held high, and they're a bright color that, reads from across the garden. So it has a sibling hybrid that's been introduced called Domino. I think of it as the boy plant and the girl plant. The pink champagne is pink with pink in the foliage, and the boy plant has, like, more masculine colors, white and cranberry flowers with not so much pink in the foliage, and it's a bigger plant.
I'm sure it's not PC for us to give it attributes like that, but who cares, right?
Well, it's a good way to describe the difference.
No, I know.
So people will understand. But they're both very vigorous growing plants, and if you wanted a specimen epimedium, people ask me if I would buy one, which one would you recommend?
I see.
And that gets quite large, so you can use it as a specimen plant.
Okay, so pink champagne and her brother Domino.
Yeah, her brother Domino.
Okay.
There's also another one called Lilac Cascade that gets quite large. It has red coloration at the edges of the leaves and lavender flowers, and it's very good and drought-tolerant. It's one of the clumping forms.
Uh-huh.
Usually the drought-tolerant ones are the spreading ones, but this one's a good drought-tolerant clumping one that makes a good show in the garden.
Huh.
And it's tough.
Yeah.
That's one thing I want to mention about epimediums. They look really delicate, but they're one of the toughest plants in the border.
And again, when you uproot them and you see what's underground, I think you get it. Like you said, it's a woody plant, right?
It's a
woody
plant.
some herbaceous thing that at a moment's, if it doesn't get a drop of water every minute, it's just going to perish because it's so delicate. It seems a little tougher to me, yeah. And what about some of the companions that you sell? I mentioned Jeffersonia, the twin leaf, and Vancouveria. What other things do you like or not like with them?
What other companion plants
you mean? Yeah. You mentioned hostas before. I mean, are there other things that you showcase in the catalog in the last minute that you can tell me about that we should look for?
Yeah, I think I carry a Trillium pusillum called Roadrunner. It's a very early blooming one. It comes up about a week before the epimediums. Has almost black foliage with little white flowers. And unlike most trilliums, it propagates very quickly, so it clumps up more quickly than other trilliums. And then there's another plant called Cardamine, which is a Cardamine trifolia, which is a little ground cover with sort of clover-like leaves and bright white flowers that blooms right around the same time as the epimediums. It doesn't spread very much. It would be a good low-growing plant for in between rocks or along the edge of a border.
Well, Karen Perkins of Garden Vision Epimediums, I'm so happy to talk to you, and I'll give all the details about both visiting and downloading the catalog and all that good stuff with the transcript of the show. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome, Margaret.
Can't
Thanks
wait
for
to see you
me.
Soon. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Underwriting support from High Mowing Organic Seeds, the first independently owned farm-based seed company proudly serving organic gardeners and farmers with 100% organic and non-GMO vegetable, herb, and flower seeds. HighMowingSeeds.com/awaytogarden. Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version on Spotify, Stitcher, or iTunes. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on Facebook or Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening, meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.